Now 3 o'clock in the afternoon. This is WBAI, listener-sponsored radio in New York. And up next, Charlie Finch, Charlie's Finch, and Art Breaking.
Matthew Finch, good afternoon. Welcome to Art Breaking. I'm Charlie Finch, glad to have you with us. Today we do a special tribute to the newly opened jewel of New York City culture, El Museo del Barrio at 1230 Fifth Avenue and 104th Street. I'll be back to introduce the panel, but first it's great to have Charlie Finch back in the DJ seat. What are we going to hear first, Charlie?
This is the Violent Femmes Breaking Up.
Take it away, Matthew Finch.
Breaking up.
Now, every once in a while, there's a crack in my smile. Dark voices are talking to me. Dark voices tell me where you're supposed to be. They said break it up. They said it's hard to do. What they say about breaking up?
Before, El Museo del Barrio has reopened. In the studio, we have Susanna Trujillo-Laval, the director and curator of the 25th anniversary shows, and three of the artists in the first show. It's a three-part show, Artists Talk Back, Visual Conversations with El Museo, in which artists were invited to interact with pieces from the over 8,000 pieces in the El Museo permanent collection. The first part, which is up from May 6th through August 14th, is called Reclaiming History, and the artists from the show that we have in the studio are Charles Bassini Rivera, Sophie Rivera, and Robert Cohen. Good afternoon, all.
No.
Good afternoon.
Now, Susanna Laval, when I went to the opening of El Museo, the reopening a few weeks back, I was just struck by the extraordinary atmosphere of celebration, of anti-elitism, of artists and the general public mingling together. It took me back to my youth when, as I told you, the Metropolitan Museum, believe it or not, used to be like that. Well, let's start out by talking about that very special night. What are some of your memories? Didn't Candida Alvarez write you a letter about it, for example?
Well, it was very exciting. Candida, another wonderful artist who is going to be in one other of these shows, wrote me a letter from New Haven, where she now lives, saying that being at the opening had brought her back to the early years, about 20 years ago, when as a young artist she used to take lessons in the arts workshops in El Barrio, and just being back in a community that she was so happy to see had not died and is still alive and going strong.
Architect Jonathan Marvel has emphasized the courtyard of El Museo in the new construction, hasn't he?
Yes, and the sense of welcoming, he has reoriented the entrance towards the center so that it's more welcoming, with the arms of what will someday be galleries on both sides, and the glorious Heckscher Theater in the center. So.
And there are 8,250 feet of exhibition, square feet of exhibition
space.
That's
right, and now it's beautiful. They flow front to back, the gallery spaces, and they're open. They've given me, as a curator, a wonderful series of spaces, small, medium, large, to work with, and I'm just so thrilled about it.
In addition to the show we're about to talk about, part one is called Reclaiming History. There's a photography show as well. Tell us about that.
There's a beautiful show of 100 images by Manuel Alvarez Bravo, one of the great photographers of the world right now, who's 93 now, and this show was organized by Arthur Oldman from the Museum of Photographic Arts in San Diego and funded by American Express as part of our anniversary exhibition.
And these photographs commemorate really the golden age of the extraordinary Latin American mural painters, don't they? Tell us about a few of the photos in the show.
Well, what's extraordinary, the reason I included him in the Reclaiming History portion is because I feel, and Charlie here, who's a photography expert, and Sophie, who's a photographer, I'm sure have their own ideas about this. I feel Alvarez Bravo really has reclaimed Mexico's history through his photographs. And if you look at for instance, I love the wall of portraits in the show, and they are really like a mini cultural history of Mexico from the 20s to the present.
Charles Bassini Rivera, as Susanna mentioned, is a extraordinary photographic maven. Tell us first of all about the organization that you founded and head, and then you and Sophie Rivera can kick us off by talking about some of the pieces that you have at El Museo now. Charles?
Yeah. The organization that I head up is called Enfoco Incorporated. We organized that in 1974 as primarily an artist organization. There were just three of us, three photographers that came together. The reason for that was that the photographs that dealt with Latinos and Puerto Ricans specifically were always of a very demeaning character whenever it appeared, either in the media or in documentation. And we felt that any of those photographs were taken by Latinos. They were taken primarily by people outside of the culture. And we were about discovering our own and making our own images. And so we decided to form an organization called Enfoco, which means in focus in Spanish. The first project that we set out to do was a documentation portfolio on on the Puerto Rican experience in New York State. Part of it was farm workers that worked upstate. That was done by Phil Dante. Another part was done by Roger Caban, and he documented the small business in the city, the bodegas, the gypsy cabs, many of the places where we congregate and we're able to have, with very small capital, open our own business. I dealt with education, so I traveled the length of New York State looking for bilingual programs in the schools, and it really was very difficult because outside of New York City, outside of the major cities, it was very difficult to find bilingual programs. So at any rate, we put that all together and marched into the New York State Council on the Arts. We have received a grant from them. It was the first grant we ever applied for, and presented them with a box of photographs. And they asked, well, what is this? And they said, well, you gave us the money, here's the work. That was how naive we were about public funding. And they said, no, you don't understand. We gave you the money so you'll be able to do the work. We don't get the work. So free of that burden, we then marched over to a Museo del Barrio and donated a portfolio of the work, the Enfoco documentation portfolio number one, to the archives of El Museo del Barrio. And then we did the same thing in Puerto Rico to the Instituto de Cultura Puertorriqueña, so that on both sides of the water there would be a collection of photographs by Puerto Rican photographers in their archives.
Now, Charles, you've chosen a piece by Nitza Tufino from the El Museo Permanent Collection. Tell us about that piece and your response to it.
Yeah, as soon as I saw the slide of the work, the artists were invited to come into the El Museo's a slide collection to look at to help choose the work they wanted to respond to. As soon as I saw the slide, I said, I have to see this piece. And they're very well ordered, and they were able to immediately find it. And I didn't realize how large it was, but it dealt so much with what I've always been interested in, and that's the passage, the journey. It really deals with a mythological pair of Indian gods, if you want to call them, petroglyph figures that have come to life. And if you want to start your history somewhere, that's a good place to start.
And these are Puerto Rican Indians depicted?
Yes. Essentially the Taino tribe, the tribe that offered their hand to Christopher Colón when he arrived asking for the gold. At any rate, when I saw that, I said, this is exactly what I'm doing with my new work, a new body of work that I have just begun. That dealt a lot with the idea of illuminations, biblical paintings. And so I used my black and white photographs and then reworked them and add a great deal of color to them, and in fact, what I like most about them is the way the color vibrates. And there was a couple that's part of that same journey, only brought up to date.
A very handsome young couple.
Beautiful, depicted
in a really romantic style. It's a romantic photograph, Charles.
It's one of it. It just shows the beauty of us. I thought, and not only that, look at the face of these of that couple. The young fellow wearing that wonderful broad-brimmed hat is looking into the camera, and he's actually waving. He's sitting down actually in a schoolroom lunchroom, which looks, of course, like a penitentiary, and he's waving at the camera with an expression that's so open, so giving, so trusting. I couldn't get over that he gave that to me. And that's very unusual in photography. Certainly now, you seldom get a response to a lens from total strangers to give you that.
Sophie Rivera, you have also chosen a couple, some might think a traditional imagery, painting by Juan Dupree from 1952 of a mother and child, and you've also taken an interesting photographic twist on this piece. Tell us about it.
Yes, well, I was impressed by Dupre's mother and child and the loving gesture that that she portrayed to her daughter. And it resonated with the photograph I'd taken of in the subway of a mother and child, and with the same protective, loving gesture, except there is a 40-year difference between one piece and the next piece, but that same feeling is emanating from both images. And
and the madre on the subway that you've chosen also look of very proud and defiance and wariness, wouldn't you say?
Yes, definitely.
Robert Cohane, you are both received and receivable as an artist in reclaiming history at El Museo del Barrio. An artist chose a piece of yours from the permanent collection, and you also responded to another artist's piece. Tell us about both of them.
Let me see. I guess I should start with perhaps the piece that I chose to put into the show, to contribute to the show when I was invited. This is an interesting story behind the whole choice process. I had originally intended a totally different piece, a piece entitled 500 Years of What? And it's a kind of a mock celebration of the 500th anniversary of the discovery of Puerto Rico, which showed a jíbaro, a Puerto Rican native, a peasant native, under a yoke, half of which is the American flag and half of which is the Spanish flag. And basically what I was talking about is the perennial and eternal state of colonialism in Puerto Rico. And I had already chosen the piece to do my dialogue with when, as we were looking for that piece, I came across this incredible, beautiful, gorgeous, shocking, stunning image by Martin Perez, whom I didn't know, I had never heard of. But what it is a double body imprint on a black background. It's the back imprint is in red, and over it is a white imprint in which is the most noticeable. It immediately reminded me of those great carcasses that Francis Bacon painted in combination with every traditional Baroque crucifixion that you could ever possibly come along, whether it be Caravaggio or Velázquez or Zurbarán or even Claudio Bravo, the Chilean painter, contemporary painter, who paints very much in a Baroque style. And when I saw this, I had a piece that I had just recently completed that is a crucifixion. It's an allegorical crucifixion, and it's entitled in Spanish, Y los cuentos, cuentos son. In English, it's titled, And with Tales of Freedom. And it's an allegory of the Americas. It was based on a quote by South American liberator Simón Bolívar, who in 1829, just a few years after the declaration of the Monroe Doctrine, warned about America, the United States of America, being if I can remember the entire quote properly, being omnipotent and terrible, and with tales of freedom will plague us all to misery. And what it is this crucifixion. The body in the crucifixion is in exactly the same shape of the Western Hemisphere. It is on a cross that symbolizes the American flag. And on the black background, because I too tried to copy or emulate all the Baroque crucifixions, that was my purpose, on the black background are enumerated all the United States interventions in Latin America by country and chronologically from the signing of the Monroe Doctrine. I thought they were a beautiful pair, color-wise, compositionally, everything. So I decided to go along with this one. As you might be able to tell by now, I do a lot of political, blatant political work.
Indeed, you're working on a piece about the 50th anniversary of the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki?
I have just started working on a diptych, a double piece, which are identical images treated slightly differently. they emulate the shadows left by victims of the explosion, usually on concrete or on sidewalks where they were laying or sitting or whatever. And basically, that's as far as I've gone. It's the concept is that I will do both of them. One will be dedicated to Hiroshima and one to Nagasaki for next year, which is the 50th anniversary of the bombing.
You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, listener-sponsored radio. This is Art Breaking, the Thursday Afternoon Arts Magazine. I'm Charlie Finch, glad to have you with us. We're celebrating the glorious reopening of El Museo del Barrio at 1230 Fifth Avenue on 104th Street. Special summer hours are Wednesday through Sunday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., and a Tuesday and Thursday, noon to 7 p.m. Contributions suggested are $4 for adults, $2 for students and senior citizens, and you can call 212-831-7272 for information. Again, in the studio, we have curator Susanna Laval, who's also the director of the museum, or Robert Cohane, Charles Bassini Rivera, and Sophie Rivera, artists in Reclaiming History, part one of the 25th anniversary show. Let's hear some more music. What do we have coming up, Charles?
The Meat Puppets with Backwater.
Take it away, Matthew Finch. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
Just a reminder to stay tuned for Shelf Life at 4 o'clock, followed by Talk Back with Playfellow Benjamin and Greg Thomas at 4:30, and the WBAI Evening News at 6 o'clock. I made a mistake in giving you El Museo del Barrio's hours again, and let me get it right this time. They are Wednesday and Friday, and Friday through Sunday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., and just Thursday, 12 to 7 p.m. And in case I didn't get it right that time, you can call 212-831-7272 for information. Again, in the studio, we have artist Robert Cohen, Sophie Rivera, Charles Bassini Rivera, and director and curator of El Museo, Susanna Olival. And Susanna, if you don't mind, whenever we have a museum curator on the show, it means we have a lot of events upcoming and future exhibitions. Take a deep breath and give us sort of a rundown about what's coming up at El Museo del Barrio.
Well, the next segment of the Artist Talk Back exhibition is called Recovering Popular Culture. And it will involve, to a certain degree, the same dialogue between contemporary artists and the collection. But we also will have two interesting components which will be much more interactive. One is the reconstruction of a bodega that we're going to do with the help of some neighborhood bodegueros and who are being our consultants. And also the back gallery where the Alvarez Bravo exhibition is right now will turn into an artisan's workshop where visitors who and children who come for our education programs will be able at any given time during the day to participate in a workshop and an ongoing workshop by one of the artisans.
Will this reconstructed bodega just be a simulacrum, or will it be functioning in some way?
You'll be able to go in, and we're trying to figure out how to make it function. I mean, at least coffee will be there. That you'll get good coffee.
Let's talk about the tension between the reality of being Latino artists and the constant struggle and dance with Anglo culture. One of the interesting things about this show is reading the catalog is there's a discussion of every different kind of art as an influence, and starting with you, Charles Bassini Rivera, to talk about your general influences as an artist and even how you began as an artist.
Well, I never thought of myself as an artist because the time when I entered photography, you were either a working photographer or you were a fine artist, fine arts. But in photography, in those 34 years ago, it was meant mostly to describe things, describe people, describe cultures. The photographer was either in commercial area or in, what's a non-commercial area?
Super commercial work.
Photojournalists didn't consider themselves commercial because they were tellers of the truth. We all believed in the truth. We all believed that things were this way or that way, and the photographs helped to describe those, which was right and which was wrong. If you came up during the Second World War, everybody knew what was right and what was wrong. So that was just carried on through the entire evolution of photography. Photography also helped to describe some awfully awful prejudices. If you look at the history of photography, it began to describe who was in and who was out, what cultures were accepted, what cultures were curious, which were the mainstream cultures, which would dictate the rights, the right art, the right justice.
So photography sort of stratified the classes.
Very much so, very much so. And it described it for everyone who couldn't even read. It was there to learn from and to understand. When I was a child in school, I remember seeing a photograph in a geography book, right? And it was a photograph of a peon sitting under a tree with a large hat. This was described as a Mexican. So we all knew in the entire class what a Mexican was. And there was no further description of that. That was simply a Mexican. It's sort of like my mother-in-law, two wives ago, saw West Side Story. She's European. And from that, she garnered what a Puerto Rican was. She had no other reference, by the way. No other reference other than the film. And so she was prepared to meet some gang member. Very interesting.
Who danced nicely.
Who danced very well and sometimes sang. So photography, that whole medium is used for a great many purposes. I became a photographer at a very early age, pre-teens, taking photographs of anything that I was curious about. Later on in the service, I became a full-fledged photographer in Korea. And when I came out, I entered the commercial world, became a fashion photographer, learned a great deal about the profession, being a master photographer, and found it sort of limited because it really dealt with a lot of the superficial things, and I was really interested in sort of core things. And so that work, by the way, was referred to by other photographers who are also interested in core things, C-O-R-E, as personal work. It wasn't your artwork, it was your personal work. And the best photographers were photographers that did personal work. People like Robert Frank, Eugene Smith, Roy Takaraba, those were the people to look up to. And if we were lucky enough, we'd meet them. And they were always very encouraging because they were people that were pretty sincere about what they were doing.
What about Gary Winogrand or Helen Levitt, artists associated with the street life of New York? Have they been an influence on either of you, Sophie?
I knew Gary, and he was another working photographer. I learned about some of his personal work. There was only one gallery, by the way, to show photography in those days. It was called the Underground Gallery. And most of the people that we're talking about showed there at one time or another. There was no commercial gallery that was identified as a photographic gallery. So we all went on trying to find out what we wanted to do in photography that was real to us and important to us. My time of discovery happened when I received a Rockefeller grant to document street theater around the world. For the Theater in the Street group. And everything was pretty much as I expected until I reached India. India is not aware of the Greek idea of theater. So the experience was so immense, so powerful. It lasted into Bali. And by the time I worked my way around the world and came up through South America and met my wife at the airport in Puerto Rico, I was really prepared to change everything that I had been doing, including where I lived and did some pioneering farming for a few years to understand what it was, what culture meant.
Sophie Rivera, were you taking pictures in the airport that day when you met your future husband?
No, I wasn't. I'm not sure what date that was, Charlie.
It was a long time ago.
Oh. Okay. I actually started photography as a means of asserting myself against my sister, who was photographing me continuously. She wouldn't allow me to photograph her, but I did get a picture of her with a sheet over her head. And from there on, I expanded. I started with the Brownie camera, and was unhappy with the black and white results I got from that, so I bought a 35mm camera and took some color photographs while I was traveling. And from there, I went to the New School, took a photography course where I learned about the history of photography and the wonderful world of vision, I should say, of many photographers, including Helen Levitt that you mentioned. And some of it frightened me and some of it enchanted me, but it certainly worked toward forming my vision in photography.
Did Helen Levitt's Depression-era photos of children in New York City have an influence on your decision to use children as subjects?
I was quite awed by her work, and certainly would like to emulate what she did. and she was influential in the work. As a matter of fact, she was influential in another aspect of my my creative endeavors, which is my writing. And I wrote a story where I used Helen Levitt's photograph as the theme for the short story. So she has worked for me in both ways. And I was quite surprised to find out that she had a camera that didn't face the subject, that looked as though she was shooting from around the corner.
At right angles.
Yes. Yes, I thought that was quite clever. And although actually I personally prefer to confront or face my subject directly somehow. But I guess if I had achieved such charming results as Helen Levitt did, I guess I would have opted for her camera.
You know that Helen, who of course is still alive and well, lives on Washington Square Park and spends her days playing poker with friends. We did a special on this show a couple of years ago when she had a retrospective at the Metropolitan Museum. Now, Sophie Rivera, you are also going to be appearing in a show at our Kankelaba House, good friend of WBAI. Of course, it's located at 2nd Street between Avenues B and C, and the opening is on Sunday, June 26th at 3 o'clock. Tell us about that show, Sophie.
Well, it's called the Puerto Rican Embassy, and they're going to have a ribbon-cutting ceremony where they'll be giving awards to... Well, actually, they'd be honorable ambassadors to Puerto Rico, and then Adal, the photographer, will be taking photographs of the artists in the exhibition, and the musicians as well, and the poets, and he'll be giving each one of us passports to Puerto Rico. There are approximately 15 artists, visual artists in the show. There'll be musicians and there'll be poets. So, and there'll be a dedication to deceased artists as well. So it should be a very exciting opening. Actually, usually about 500 people attend this opening, I'm made to understand. So, and I'm not sure that it'll be air conditioned, but it should be very, very exciting.
About 3:52, we'll be hearing a little more photography news from producer Mark Leosa, who will be doing a tape report on the Henri Cartier-Bresson show at ICP. Robert Cohane, one cannot help in looking at your imagery of thinking of the great political content of the muralists like Diego Rivera. Was that a direct influence on your work?
Oh, very direct, very direct. As a matter of fact, I've made several pilgrimages to Puerto Rico. I mean, I'm sorry, to Mexico. To study the murals in person. I am perhaps the most traditional of the artists, probably in the show.
That
I don't
you
know.
Are.
I get the feeling I am. I'm very Baroque and terribly, terribly Eurocentric. I'm not sure I see myself exclusively as whatever a Latino or Hispanic artist may be. I don't like either of those terms, by the way. I feel very uncomfortable with them because they strike me as attempts to give racial overtones to what is really a linguistic category, since Latin Americans, which is what we are, have all sorts of backgrounds, same as North Americans would. So I always look at this Latino-Hispanic thing with a little bit of, I don't know.
It's that Anglo-Germanic urge to simplify.
Yes, very, very, very
and
easy.
And I just simplified myself by making that reference.
But
continue,
anyway,
Robert.
Anyway, where were we? Yes, absolutely, the muralists are a terrific influence, but so are the great Baroque masters, European masters. I am really a psychologist. I never received really formal art training. I am from the hodgepodge school of art, meaning I grabbed courses wherever I could. I always wanted to be an artist, and I still want very desperately to be an artist when I grow up someday. And maybe I'll get to it at some point. I am a painter and nothing else but a painter.
It's time for some more music from Post Generation X, and Charlie Finch will introduce the next cut.
step
this
up.
This is one of my favorite songs. It's called Disarm by Smashing Pumpkins.
Stay tuned. Charles Rivera, you also have a show opening this Monday. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I just want to mention that we have a photographic exhibition of works done by Angela Cabrera Mendez, who's a photographer from Puerto Rico. And that's going to take place at the Fordham Public Library on Bainbridge Avenue in the Bronx. It'll open on Monday and run for a month. The subject is photographs that she's done during various visits to sections of Mexico. One of the things I wanted to get back to is something that Robert talked about, and that was descriptions of ourselves and the terms that are applied to describe us. I'm very interested in new descriptions because the terms that are used to describe us before came from another part of the society, the mainstream of the society. They decided who was colored, who was Negro. It wasn't until the communities themselves and the folks themselves started to band together and started choosing their own descriptions. So when you were talking about descriptions of Latinos, Hispanics. I'm sorry, moving away from the mic there. When Robert was talking about Latinos, the words used to describe Latin Americans, Caribbeans, Central Americans, Spanish-speaking people who live in the United States, that's very important to us, us meaning the community of photographers that come from those areas. We're very interested in examining that further to determine who we are as far as what terminology is used about us. I think whatever it is comes from us, and it should come from us.
Robert?
I don't have to figure out who I am. I am, in the more general terms, if I have to be described as anything, Latin American, and in the more specific terms, Puerto Rican. I am nothing else. That's the way I see it. So I don't believe in terms to accommodate the North American masses or their tastes or their categories.
And isn't it an issue of the dominant Anglo culture sort of filtering everything through when we really want the real thing and the struggle to find the real thing?
What is the real thing?
I think El Museo has made a start.
Well,
you were saying,
but,
Susan,
you know,
that you still feel a need to justify the museum to the public at large.
Not at all. I don't feel a need to justify
it. Not personally, but sometimes
I'm often called upon to justify it. And it's a very interesting phenomenon, because nobody would ask the Center for British Art in New Haven to justify its existence, but we are often called
upon. I would.
You would ask the right question,
is.
Though. But remember, El Museo was founded by an extraordinary visionary community of educators, artists, community activists who felt invisible within North American culture, and it finally we have proceeded. They wanted an institution to reflect them, and in the last decade, I think, following what Charlie was saying, and what Lucy Lepard has called the self-naming decade, it is what people have tried, artists have tried to do in their work, and that is one of the reasons why the reclaiming history theme came up, because of it really has come from, I think, a real groundswell of naming themselves. But to go back to something very interesting is that you, Robert, are able to define yourself that way in a very self-confident way. But it gets much more complicated than that, because as there are now three generations of Puerto Rican artists in the U.S., and as Papo Colo has often said, you know, this country is a paradise for hybrids, and so nothing is very pure anymore. And one of the things that El Museo del Barrio can be unique in, and it is unique anyway, is in documenting through the works and its exhibitions and the collection, the changing selves, the almost a negotiating sense of self and identity as the mixture of cultures shifts and balances.
Well, that of course depends on whether or not you buy into the mythological melting pot, which I do not. I do not accept the melting pot, and I do not wish to be part of the melting pot. I should at this point interject to give credit where it's due, and I must give credit to you for doing something which I think is very interesting and very wonderful, and that's expanding the scope of El Museo del Barrio from what was originally a very local type of thing, which serviced mostly the Puerto Rican community around it, to turning it into a major exhibition space for Latin American arts, and I think that's a great step forward.
Well, I can't take full credit for that. There were predecessors for that. El Museo actually has had exhibitions of Latin American artists for close to 15 years, but El Barrio has changed tremendously,
yes,
demographically,
course.
And we are El Museo del Barrio, so we must reflect that as well.
You also have a show at the Equitable Gallery North at 787 7th Avenue at 52nd Street called The Latino Papers. Tell us about that, Susanna.
Well, we had the wonderful chance to show there, and I invited Luis Kamnitzer, a wonderful artist and writer from Uruguay, and Lowry Stokes Sims, curator from
the Metropolitan
Museum, to choose about 60, just go into our storerooms of the works on paper, which are a very stellar part of our collection, and just choose pieces that they loved. And they have come up with a beautiful show, and I hope it's...
Let me emphasize, by the way, that I may have said that Sophie Rivera's show at Ken Kellogg opens at 3 o'clock on Thursday, June 26th. I'm having trouble with my facts today. It's on Sunday, June 26th at 3 o'clock. The Puerto Rican Embassy, Ken Kellogg House, 2nd Street between Avenues B and C. We're going to hear a short taped report from a producer here at WBAI, Mr. Mark Leosa. Stay tuned.
The International Center of Photography is paying tribute to one of this century's master photographers, Henri Cartier-Bresson. Born in 1908, he began his artistic life as a painter, exploring the moving image, and began photography in the early 1930s. His images capture the moment, all the more remarkable since they were taken with a manual camera. No autofocus, electronic shutter or film events, but a simple 35mm camera. Cartier-Bresson traveled the world and caught what he terms the decisive moment. Images of the human experience are frozen in time. To quote Cartier-Bresson, "To me, photography is the simultaneous recognition, in a fraction of a second, of the significance of an event, as well as of a precise organization of forms which give that event its proper expression." The photographs have tributes written by 40 artists, friends, and people influenced by him, such as composer Pierre Boulez and painter Francis Bacon. After escaping a German prison camp and joining the French resistance, he helped organize the filming of the liberation of Paris. This in turn led to a cooperative venture that became the Magnum Photo Agency. Cartier-Bresson is a quiet, humble man. This comes across in a 38-minute video, Henri Cartier-Bresson, Point d'Interrogation, 1994, by Sarah Moon and Robert Delpre. This biography is interspersed with clips of contemporary interviews commenting on his development. The gently probing questions gets this shy and private man to express his feelings about love and relationships, namely that they are difficult. We also get to see Cartier-Bresson draw and paint, skills developed earlier in life that he's returning to. The video complements the photo exhibition, which will be on view at the International Center of Photography until September 4th, 1994. This is Mark Leoso for WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.
Next week in our usual slot, 3 o'clock on June 23rd, my guests will be artists Cindy Tower and Susan Unterberg, currently showing at the New Museum in Soho. That's a pretty wild dual show down there. And also curator Sharon Apareo from Madras in India will be in town to talk about contemporary Indian art with her American counterpart, Louis Arthur. Hope you can tune in for that next Thursday at 3 o'clock. Again, the El Museo del Barrio is located at 1230 Fifth Avenue at 104th Street. Let's see if I can get the museum hours right the third time. Wednesday through Sunday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., except Thursdays, 12 p.m. to 7 p.m. Contributions suggested, $4 for adults, $2 for senior citizens, and students, if you don't know that part of town, it's one of the most gorgeous parts of town, with a wonderful garden in Central Park right across. You can smell those flowers this time of year. Again, thanks to three of the artists in the show, Robert Cohen, Charles Bassini Rivera, and Sophie Rivera. Go up and see their work at El Museo. Thanks to Susanna Lavelle, the director and curator of the museum. Thanks to Barbara Goldner for her sterling help, as always, in putting this show together, and to Charlie Finch for selecting the music. Thanks to Matthew Finch for doing the board. Stay tuned for the Poison Arts Minute, followed by Shelf Life. And thank you for listening. Good afternoon. Na, 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 na. Na, 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 na.